going to talk about his entire mental results. Okay. So the first one about killing is that we're born in a place with where there's a lot of warfare and strife, where the food and the drink and the medicine are not very strong, don't have much effect. So we may have lived in those kind of places in our life. Most of us, I think, at least here in this room, and maybe listening on, you know, on the teleteachings, have had different experiences, so that as a result of, you know, taking precepts not to kill and deliberately not killing or saving life. So then the next one is stealing, and the environmental result of that is living in a place where there's many dangers, where there's a lot of poverty and droughts or floods. Okay, so you can kind of see the link here between the action and the kind of environment. You know, killing is a very violent action, so you're born in a place where there's violence, you know, and where the things you need to stay alive aren't available or aren't very potent. In stealing, you know, we've taken others' material resources, so we're born in a place where there's a lack of material resources, a very poor country, in a place where there's droughts and floods, so that, you know, the crops don't grow, so that you can't get the food. So you can see how it's the result of taking what hasn't been given to us, that we're born in a place where we can't get what we need to sustain our own lives. And then the environmental result from my sexual conduct is being born in a very dirty and muddy and unsanitary place. Okay? So again, you can see some kind of connection. You know, you're sleeping around with everybody, and you know, you're born in a place where the environment kind of reflects that kind of mentality. Then for lying, born in a place with a foul odor, where people are deceitful and there's much fear. So again, you can see, you know, a place with a foul odor because, you know, lying, it stinks, doesn't it? You know? Yeah? And the people are deceitful, so everybody's trying to, you know, cheat each other. And, you know, you have to give a payoff for this and a payoff for that. And there's a place where there's a lot of fear, because when we lie, you know, we destroy the trust amongst human beings. So then it makes sense that you're born in a place where there's a lot of fear, where people don't trust each other. Okay, like, let's say China during the Cultural Revolution, where people were turning on each other. You know, family members were betraying each other, and teachers and students were, you know, betraying each other, so there's a lot of fear. And so that kind of result comes from lying. And then from disharmonious speech, born in a place that's very bumpy and uneven and where travel is very difficult. Okay, so you know, when we use our speech to create disharmony, it prevents people coming together. So you're born in a place where it's difficult to get together. You know, it's bumpy and it's uneven, and travel is difficult, and the roads are bad, and there's cliffs that you fall off of, and, you know, hard for people to kind of come together and meet and work together. And then for harsh words, born in a place that is barren and dry and that's inhabited by uncooperative people, okay, a place where there's a lot of thorns and sharp stones and dangerous animals. So again, you can see the relationship with harsh speech. Harsh speech is harsh. You know, it is thorny. It makes people's minds thorny. It makes people's minds, you know, uncomfortable. So you're born in a place that's dry and barren and steep rocks and thorns and uncooperative people and dangerous animals. You know, because being around somebody who has harsh speech is kind of dangerous for your own sense of emotional well-being. You know? So then you're born in a place where there's this kind of external danger. Okay, then idle talk. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. About all the things we think are interesting that nobody else does. Then we're born in a drab place with an unbalanced climate where the crops don't ripen at the proper time. Okay, Joe, you know, drab place, like how other people experience our idle talk, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then you waste a lot of time, so things don't happen on time, and so your crops, you come in a place where your crops don't ripen on time. Okay? Then covetousness, then, you know, so that's the greedy mind that's planning how to get things that don't belong to us. So then we're born in a place where the crops are very small, you know, the harvest is very small, and the environment is constantly deteriorating. Okay, so that coveting mind, wanting other people's stuff, is wanting stuff that doesn't belong to us, making, mentally, we're making other people's resources deteriorate, so then we're born in a place where the resources are deteriorating. Okay, kind of like now, the environment, you know, deteriorating. Then malice, ill will, plotting how to get our revenge, how to hurt somebody else. Then we're born in a place where there's a lot of disputes, where there's epidemics, where there's dangerous animals and poisonous snakes. So just kind of like how the mind of malice is, isn't it? It's like a poisonous snake, you know, mentally, inside. If you were going to paint that mental state, it's, you know, a ferocious tiger, a poisonous snake, what do you call them, scorpion, you know, ready to sting somebody. Maybe like those hornets that were on the temple today. Yeah, if you're born in a place with lots of hornets. Epidemics, the result of malice. And then if holding distorted views, then you're born in a place where there's very few crops and where there's a lack of a home. You know, you're kind of homeless, there's not many homes, and you have no protection or protector. And so you can see that mental state holding distorted views. There's no protection in that mental state, you know, because it's so full of wrong views. So then born in an environment that reflects that. You know, sometimes people ask me, this kind of going on to a slightly different topic about the different realms, but people ask me, you know, do these different realms that are the ripening result of the karma, do they really exist as places, or are they just mental states that we human beings experience? Well, certainly we human beings experience hellish mental states, or, you know, mental states like animals, or, you know, like the hungry ghost. But if you think about, you know, if you really get into the mental state that creates any of these 10 actions, and then if you were to imagine what that mental state would look like if it were projected into a body, then you get the body and mind of that different kind of realm, don't you? Yeah. So in the same way with the environment, that mental state, it's like if you were going to project it into an environment, that's what it would look like. If you were projected into a body and a mind, into the five aggregates of a living being, you know, the rebirth that we take, that's what the, you know, those mental states would look like. And so sometimes what we might say about somebody, that they act worse than an animal, so then, you know, if they're born in an animal body in the next life, you can see how that could happen. That mental state, you know, is attracted to it, projects that kind of rebirth and is interested in it. And when you're born in that kind of rebirth, it's as real to you as our world is to us right now. You know, we always kind of think, well, the human world is the real one. And then all these other ones are somehow, they're like dreams, you have a dream, you know. But then our human life should be like a dream. Yeah, or those other rebirths should be real as it feels to us in our human rebirth. Yeah, because we're just born in a realm right now. You know, for some short period of time, we have this rebirth, and then we die, and, you know, the consciousness is attracted to another kind of situation. Okay, so thinking about all these kinds of results for the negative actions that we've done, then it generates a very strong feeling to do some purification. When we think about the positive results, which would be the opposite of these negative ones, and they're the results of the 10 virtues, then it encourages us to want to act in more compassionate, constructive ways. Okay, so doing this kind of meditation, where you especially, you know, when you look over your whole life and you pick out a few select things. Okay, I don't know about you, but I don't have any problem remembering negative actions I've engaged in, you know. There's no shortage of memory of those kinds of things. So it doesn't take me long to pull one out. And then, you know, contemplate kind of, well, what? How did I get involved in that? What kind of motivation did I have? And, you know, did I rejoice afterwards? How did it affect other people? What kind of karma, karmic imprint, karmic seed did it put on my own mind stream? What kind of rebirth am I going to be reborn in as a result of that? What kind of habitual tendencies I have? That one, actually, I find very frightening, the habitual tendencies. And they actually say that the habitual tendencies, that result is the most dangerous one, because with that one, you keep doing the same non-virtue again and again and again. You know, with the other ones, you experience that rebirth, or you live in that environment, and the karma ripens and it finishes. But with that causally concordant habitual result, it's the tendency to do the non-virtuous action again and again. So that one really is bad. So, you know, when you think about it, you know, like if I'm thinking about something I did, and it's like, you know, if I don't want to kind of continue that behavior into my future lives, and then even I'm born human, then to have other people make me feel like what I've made them feel like, and be born in these rotten kind of environments and having so many obstacles, you know, when I really think about it, first of all, it makes my own life seem incredibly miraculous. Like, how in the world did I ever get the fortune I have this life? You know, it's like totally amazing. How did I get born as a human being? How is it, especially when I think how many times I've been miserly, you know, even about sharing food, and then how is it that I have so much food to eat, you know, and I'm not born in a place where there's, you know, drought and you can't get food? How is it that I have the opportunity to listen to teachings, you know, especially now with Yeshua? It's like totally amazing. How did I create that karma to have that opportunity? So first of all, you know, reflecting on this instills an incredible appreciation for this little window of time that we have called human life, and precious human life, and especially this present one. You know, it's like really precious. And then thinking about, you know, what's going to happen after I die, and what kinds of imprints are there in my mind, where am I likely to get reborn, and what's it going to be like to experience those kind of results that are the result only of my own actions. There's nobody else to blame for them, you know. There's a try as I might have, as I might, there's nobody else in the whole wide world to blame for my experiences, you know. It's all a result of my own actions, and I have to be responsible for that. And then what lies behind these actions are these two culprits, that self-grasping ignorance and the self-centered mind. So here I am this life, again, following these two culprits. You know, what am I doing? You know, this is not smart, children. You've got to change. So then you really get some impulse, some inspiration to do some purification practice. Yeah, because you don't want to experience those results in the future. And it's not just because those results are painful that you don't want to experience them. You know, initially, because we're the kind of beings that, you know, it's like, I don't want any pain. Initially, our first motivation may be, well, I want to purify because I don't want to experience pain in future lives. But after a while, it dawns on you, wait a minute, that isn't really such a good motivation. I mean, it's an okay motivation, you know. But if we're looking out for our future lives, then at least not have those bad rebirths, because if we're born there, we won't be able to practice the Dharma. And that's a worse result than experiencing pain. Okay? That is more to be terrified of, is to be born in a situation where you can't practice the Dharma as a result of our negative actions. You know, if we're born in a life where we have some pain, that's actually not too bad. You know, I mean, compared to being born in a life where you don't have the opportunity to meet the Dharma. You know, think about it. Because if you're born in a place where there's lots of pain, you know, you experience some pain, you have cancer, AIDS, or kidney disease, or you're born in a house or whatever, that karma ripens. You know, it lasts a minute, it lasts a few eons, but it's done. Okay? But if we're born in a place where we don't have the opportunity to meet the Dharma and practice the Dharma, then we're really screwed. Yeah, then we've really had, because then, you know, no opportunity then to create any good karma or purify any karma. And you just, you know, you may have this luxury house in Beverly Hills, but you haven't met the Dharma, and so all your good karma is just getting burnt up and no opportunity to create any more. So when you think about it, that is much more terrifying than just being, having a lower rebirth. Yeah. Is being born in a place where we don't have access, or where we have a lot of hindrances to practicing the Dharma. Even you're born, you know, and you've met the teacher and met teachings and things like that, then you have health problems as a result of killing, okay? Or you can't get resources, the resources you need to practice because of stealing, yeah? Or you can't get to where the teacher is to hear teachings because of, you know, divisive speech. And you can't travel and get there. So there's all these kinds of things, you know. And when you think about it, then, you know, you really want to do some purification. So that's why, you know, usually this topic of purification comes later in the karmic outline. But on the request of the people here, we're moving it up to this week. Okay? Because I think it's a good idea, you know, if we do some purification. So the purification basically revolves around what we call the four opponent powers. Okay? So these four, we do them all together, and they function, you know, in a whole way to reduce the impact of the karma. And so how much these four are able to reduce the ripening of the karma depends upon the sincerity with which we do them and the frequency with which we do them. Okay? So let's look at these four and we can kind of make some examples. So the first one is regretting our negative actions. Okay? So hopefully by now we have some regret. Yeah? If, you know, later on kind of our regret feels a little bit weak, then go back and, you know, reflect on the harmful actions we've done. Think about the various results that they bring, you know, so that it causes some concern in the mind and makes us want to purify. Because this first one of regret is the chief one. You know, none of the others really have any meaning or significance if we don't regret the destructive actions. You know, because we have no regret, then, you know, we're not going to do the other three. Or even if we do the other three, they're only going to be blah, blah words. Because, you know, our mind's not going to be transformed. Okay? Now, one thing that is really important in talking about regret is that regret and guilt are two different things. Okay? I think the tape is working. We should remember regret and guilt are two different things. And I say this because we are very good at making ourselves feel guilty. And from a Buddhist viewpoint, guilt is an emotion to be abandoned. It's a hindrance on the path. It's a disturbing attitude, a negative emotion. Okay? So don't think about the negative actions and then feel guilty. Yeah? Because guilt is not purified. Yeah? Somehow, I mean, this psychologically, the way we function is we feel that if I feel guilty and I blame myself and I feel awful, then somehow I'm repenting for how I made other people feel. Okay? Is that logical? That's not very logical, is it? You know? That the more I feel guilty, the more I purify, because the worse I feel. Yeah, and we've been studying syllogisms. Is that one? Does that one have the three modes?
It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. Okay? So, because what's happening when we're feeling guilty is we're the star of the show. We're completely stuck in me again, aren't we? Except this time, you know, I'm very important, not in a good sense, but I'm very important because I can destroy everything and make such a mess. Somehow I'm worse than everybody else. And then we sit and beat ourselves up and feel guilty and get depressed. And that is not, you know, this first opponent power. And anyway, the Buddha, you know, if it were the first opponent power, then the Buddha would not have needed to teach the four opponent powers. Because we already know how to feel guilty, don't we? Yeah. And so the Buddha didn't need to teach us how to feel guilty, because we do that all by ourselves. Yeah. And so this first one of regret is very important. Don't let your mind slip into guilt. Okay. And the way that I use to tell the difference between the two is, if you know, you think of the old electric stoves that, you know, where the coils are still hot even if they're black, you know, after you turn them off. So if you accidentally touch one of those stoves and you burn your hand, you regret it, don't you? But do you feel guilty? No, you don't feel guilty. You just regret having done that. So that's, you can see, that's the difference between guilt and regret. So similarly here, you know, we regret our negative actions, but we don't feel guilty about them. Okay, so that's the first of the four opponent powers. Then the second one, and by the way, in different texts, they talk about them in different orders. The regret always comes first, but the other three are sometimes in different orders. So it doesn't mean that you have to practice the other three in a specific order. It could be in different orders. Anyway, the second one is, I call it restoring the relationship. In other words, when we created negative actions, it was done in relationship to other beings. Okay? So it was either in relationship to holy beings, our spiritual mentors, or the three jewels, or in relationship to sentient beings. And so we need to repair that relationship. Specifically in our own mind, we need to repair it. Okay, if it's possible to go to the person and apologize, it's very good to do that. Yeah, but it's not necessary, because sometimes the person may have died, they may not be ready to speak to us yet, something like that. But we really have to repair the relationship in our own mind. Okay, in other words, when we did that negative action in relationship to either holy beings or sentient beings, we had a harmful intention and some kind of disturbing emotion was towards them, you know. So now what we want to do is cultivate a constructive emotion, a useful, a beneficial emotion towards the same ones that we had had a harmful emotion towards previously. So in the case of the holy beings, then we take refuge in them, okay? So we may have, you know, had distorted views and had a lot of disrespect for Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. We may have stolen offerings from Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. There's all, you know, we may have lied to our spiritual teachers or spoken harshly to them or things like that, okay? So here what we want to do is instead take refuge and really see them as our spiritual guides and as beings who are working very hard to lead us to enlightenment, okay? And so trusting them in being our spiritual guides. And then in the terms of ordinary sentient beings, we want to generate a motivation of love and compassion and bodhicitta towards them, okay? So if we look at the 10 destructive actions, we got involved in them basically, you know, out of ignorance, anger, and attachment. So what's the opposite of that? Yeah, we're going to have some wisdom, but chiefly as a motivating factor, the bodhicitta, the loving, compassionate thought. Okay, so that is restoring the relationship in our own heart. So we can see that this is going to take a little bit of work on our part, because sometimes when we think about our negative actions that we've done, we have some regret, but we still have some bad feelings towards the other person. So we need to really work on our own mind and, you know, solve or resolve those bad feelings, those negative emotions towards the other person, and get to a place where either we have a neutral state or, you know, specifically, a more loving, compassionate, tolerant, patient attitude, forgiving attitude. Okay, so that's the second of the four. Then the third is making a determination not to do the action again. So if we have strong regret, then very naturally what comes from that is some kind of determination to not repeat the action. So there's some negative actions where we can really, where we really feel very strongly, like, enough, I am never doing that one again. You know, it's just like we just see the defects and we're fed up and there's a very strong intention. And, you know, and this is kind of the mind when we take precepts. We want to have that mind of, you know, really strongly, I'm not going to do this again. Yeah? So that has a very purifying effect because it stops that result of doing the action habitually, to have a strong resolution not to do it again. Now there's some, you know, harmful actions that if we were to say that we were never to do them again, it would almost be like we were lying. Okay? Like, for example, idle talk. Can we truthfully say that we're never going to want to idle talk again? Doubtful, huh? Okay. So with that one, maybe what we're going to do is say, okay, for the next 2 days, I'm going to be really, really attentive. Huh? And pay very close attention to what I'm saying and who I'm speaking and things like that. Or something like harsh words. Yeah? Could we truthfully say we're never going to say them again? That's hard. So we might make a determination when we're trying to purify a specific, you know, situation where we spoke harshly. Okay, for the next week, I'm going to be really, really attentive, you know, and not ridicule people and not explode at them and not criticize them and dump my anger all over them. I'm going to be really, really careful. Yeah? And so sometimes when you give yourself a time period like this that's doable, it gives you a sense of self-confidence because after your 2 days or after your week, you know, because you've been checking up every day on yourself because it's only a small period of time, then you feel, oh yeah, I was able to pull it off for those 2 days. Well, let's try a little bit longer. Okay? And so it gives us some encouragement. Whereas if we bite off a huge length of time at the beginning, you know, that might seem too abstract for us. Okay? And then, so that's the third, you know, having some determination not to repeat the action. And then the fourth of the four opponent powers is some kind of remedial behavior. So this can be done in terms of formal spiritual practice. It can also be done in terms of offering service to the community. So in terms of formal spiritual practice, we have specific practices such as prostrations to the 35 Buddhas, Vajrasattva, you know, purification practice. Those are designed specifically for purifying negative actions. Reciting the names of the Buddha, you know, a specific Buddha, or reciting mantras, because a lot of mantras basically are the names and paying homage to specific Buddhas. Meditating on emptiness. Reciting Dharma texts. And when I talk about reciting, it's not just blah, 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 because then, you know, you could, the tape recorder could do some purification. It's, you know, really trying to change your mind while you're doing the recitation. Okay? So meditating on emptiness, meditating on bodhicitta, printing Dharma books for free distribution, you know, making offerings to the Buddha Dharma Sangha, doing the refuge practice. You know, we have these practices, of the Nundra practices, the preliminary ones that you do before a 3-year tantric retreat. So all of these are designed very much for purification and accumulation of positive potential. Okay? And then in terms of offering service, which is another way to purify. This could be like doing volunteer work at a temple or at a monastery, at a Buddhist center. Okay, so doing you know, putting your body and your resources where your values are and helping the Dharma to spread through, you know, putting your energy into different Dharma projects and Dharma events. It could be doing volunteer work at a hospital, or let's say at a cerebral palsy institute or an MS institute, something, you know, that's treating people with specific kinds of diseases. Doing some kind of, let's say, volunteering at a food bank in your community. Yeah. So actual actions that you do where you're putting your time and your energy into directly benefiting sinful beings. So that could also be part of the remedial actions that help us to you know, complete the purification. So the masters usually encourage us to do purification practice on a daily basis. Why? Because if we review our day at the end of the day, we've usually created some negative karma on a daily basis. Yeah, and so that's why this practice that I often give people is very good in this regard. You know, when you first wake up in the morning, to generate a very strong intention, first of all, not to harm anybody, second of all, to benefit others in your life as much as you can, and third, to have that long-term bodhicitta motivation. So if you generate that when you first wake up in the morning, before you even get out of bed, okay, so there's no excuse not to do it, because you can do it when you're lying in bed, you know, you generate your motivation, then that helps you, you know, maintain more awareness and mindfulness during the day. And then in the evening, sit and review your whole day, okay, and go over either the precepts you have, or go over these 10 non-virtues, and do some contemplation about, well, how did I do? You know, when was I able to abandon some of the 10 non-virtues? Did I do the opposite and engage in any of the 10 virtuous actions? And so rejoice, you know, at our own virtuous actions. I think this is very, very important, because we're always used to looking at, you know, our mistakes, but I think it's extremely important that we look at what we did well as well. And then also, when we do see that we engaged in some of the 10 negative actions, then to sit down and do these 4 opponent powers. Yeah. Now, if you look at a practice such as the 35 Buddha prostrations or Vajrasattva, those 4 opponent powers are explicitly contained in those practices. I think it's very helpful before doing those practices just to spend a little bit of time reviewing our day and generating strong regret for the mistaken actions that we've done. So like I said before, that's the real determining factor whether the purification's gonna really be working or not. So spend some time reviewing and having that regret. And really, I find it also very beneficial, you know, okay, I spoke harshly to somebody, to go back and, well, what was my motivation for doing that? And how did my mind get into that mental state where I wanted to speak harshly to somebody? And how can I, you know, if I'm still feeling negatively towards that person, then I need to do some meditation on patience. So I pull out Guide to Bodhisattva's Way of Life, Chapter 6, or Working with Anger, which is plagiarized from Santideva, and do some of those meditations to subdue my anger, you know, and kind of heal from any residual negative emotion I had from those harsh words that I spoke to somebody. And then I think, okay, if I'm in a similar situation in the future, what can I do with my mind to make my mind peaceful so that I don't, you know, think that speaking harshly to somebody is going to make me happy? You know? And what can I do with my speech at that time so that I don't, you know, vent any anger on somebody else? So I think it's very helpful to consider alternatives. And, you know, cause we're very much creatures of habit. So, you know, after a while we may find, you know, okay, Well, I have a tendency, I've noticed over many times, I speak harshly to people who I perceive as having authority in my life. Okay? So it's my boss, it's my parents, it's, you know, the police, it's whoever, you know, whenever I encounter some kind of authority figure, I tend to, you know, get defensive and speak harshly and blow up. So what's going on in my mind? That, you know, there's this habitual tendency in this kind of situation. Because I have to really work on that, because where am I ever going to go in my life where there's never going to be any authority figures? You know, impossible. So I have to work on my own mind and see how I can keep calm and patient in these kinds of situations. Okay, you getting what I mean? So we're doing some reflection and preparing ourselves for possible events that might happen in the future. And we can do that by going back and thinking about events that happened in the past and imagining practicing the Dharma, meaning transforming our mental state in them, so that, you know, instead of being angry or greedy or whatever, we have a peaceful mind, and then how we could have acted in those past situations so that we didn't create that negative karma. Okay. You getting what I mean? So using our very own life experience as the basis for practicing these four opponent powers and for practicing the antidotes to ignorance and to attachment and to anger and resentment. Okay? Because if we do this, then for sure we're going to start to change. Okay? For sure. If we don't do this, then the Dharma is somehow remaining at a very intellectual level, you know, because we're not really looking at our own lives and our own actions and our own emotional states. Yeah? But if we really take the time to look and to practice in this way, then surely there's going to be some change. Okay? Because at the beginning it's harder, because we have to, we have to do something with our anger, you know, and that's hard at the beginning. Because, you know, when we're habituated with anger, then, you know, it appears like there's no way to stop it. Why? Because I'm right and they're wrong, so why should I stop being angry? Yeah? So first you have to work through that one and figure out that, you know, that being right has nothing to do with being angry. Yeah. And then we might have a little humility and admit that sometimes we're wrong. Imagine that. Yeah. And that sometimes even we're right, but why do we have to be angry at it? You know, about it. Okay. So really doing some pretty serious work. And it takes some time. Many of you have heard me talk about my experience living in Italy, being the spiritual director with the Macho Italian monks. And then I went and did retreat after that experience, where I generated a lot of negative karma, getting angry day and night. Well, definitely during the day, and then in the night I'd go back and read Shanti Deva's text. But then I went to do retreat after that, you know, and I'm sitting there trying to, you know, visualize and do retreat, and all I'm thinking about it is people that I'm still so mad at. You know, these beep, beep, beeps, that are such beep, beep, beeps, you know, that did such horrible things to poor, innocent, sweet, benevolent, good-natured me, you know, that was innocent and undeserving of all the horrible things. You know, that I was still had a lot of rancor in my mind. And so I remember in the middle of retreat, you know, again practicing Shanti Deva's techniques, getting my mind a little bit calm, finally, you know. So I was able to do, you know, a few mantra at the end of the session. And then getting up from the session, and when I thought about the situation again, getting angry all over again, you know. And so at the beginning it was really quite a bit of effort just to work with the mind and keep trying to do something with this anger, because I was really livid. But, you know, the thing is, what you can see is if you practice this way over a period of time, because we are creatures of habit, that when you try and make a new habitual mental state and you cultivate that, doing it again and again and again, you start habituating yourself with a new way of looking at the situation. And then that new way of looking at the situation becomes much easier to call to mind, and it becomes a much more natural perspective over time. Yeah, and so then even if anger comes, it's not so strong, or, you know, sometimes you might not even get angry, imagine that, or, you know, you're able to deal with it a lot better, okay? But we have to put the energy into it. There's no kind of push button or pill taking mental change that's, you know, going to solve these kind of habitual tendencies. Okay, so that's a little bit about purification.